Oh, when you were talking, I was just thinking, but that, but there's a real power too that comes with when you know you're on the outside, when you know you were born wrong, that you were not meant to survive, that everything you've ever done was wrong. There's a certain kind of power when we survive, and that's it, that we know what it feels like, and that comes through, I think, all of our writing, and that is the particular strength that very often we feel, and it's very wonderful.
It comes to you in flashes, you know. Now, I know when I first started writing poetry in this new phase, I would never read a poem in public without showing it to my 10 closest, best friends, critics, right? So, because I was terrified that I was going to make a fool of myself, you know, in public. So, recently I had a wonderful victory. I had a vacation recently and I wrote a poem to read at a reading that I was going to do when I came back. And I didn't show it to anybody. I didn't show it to anybody, you know? And it was great. And I read it and people liked it. You know, but like, that was okay, but the thing that was really important to me was that I felt strong enough and I felt enough confidence in myself to do that, you know, and not be worried so much about what are people going to say and is it going to be good and, you know, like that. So it is, it's that, and it's that power coming through. And it's like after a while you say, well, fuck it, what do I have to
That's
do?
Right.
You know, they can't take anything away from me because I don't have anything. So I might as well. And I'm carrying all this stuff around in me, you know. So I might as well go on and give it up, you know. And then another thing that's important, well, that has been important for me personally, is that the support of so many other women, and especially other women of color, you know, that's something that I have found to be very important, that that there are a lot of women who are, you know, we're really all saying the same thing, you know, in a certain kind of way, and just knowing that you're not out there by yourself, you know, when you plug into like this community of today, and then when you think about all of the women that have come before us who have been doing the same thing that we're trying to do in one form or another, whether they were picking cotton or chopping tobacco or whatever, then it gives you more of a sense of having a right and almost a duty to say the things that that you feel afraid to say, you know?
Well, of course, you know, what Hattie and Audrey have already said are things that very much speak to, you know, my experience, you know, in writing. Hattie talked about phases, you know, in her career of being new writer, the old stuff, and what she used to write and their stuff and art, etc. I feel that I, you know, have had phases too. I didn't start writing when I started publishing. Clearly, I started before then. But but like, I always wanted to be a writer. To me, what it meant to be a writer was to write, you know, fiction or poetry, you know, creative writing. The kind of writing that I have done a huge amount of is nonfiction, you know, essays, theoretical, and also literary criticism. And, you know, in the last couple of years, I'm beginning to do what I always thought was what a real writer did, which is to write fiction. I think those are false dichotomies. I feel that the thing I have at the top of my list of to answer the question why I don't write or why I didn't write, and it's both ongoing, you know, I don't and I didn't, is self-hatred. And I feel that like even to think of the categories as one being above the other and one real and one not real, if what you're doing is heartfelt and transforming, you know, is this put down. So the thing is, the fact that it was not that hard for me to write, you know, clear prose, that was nothing then. You know, if I could do it, it was nothing. And that, or at least it was easy, you know. But I've discovered in more recent years, you know, as my sanity has increased, that people say, but I can't write an essay, I can't write one paragraph, you know, that follows another. And so like I have found out, you know, something about that, although, you know, I like my favorite literary form is fiction. You know, like reading novels and short stories, like to me that's just, you know, the greatest, because you find out, you know, something, you just get so immersed in another person's life and consciousness. There's a way that you can lose yourself in a work of fiction that I just find very compelling, you know, because, you know, really good fiction, you know, has lots of characters, plot, you know, scene, history, you know, it's just pretty great, you know. It's kind of like dreams in a way, because of the fact that it's this very creative and like detailed, complex fabric, you know, that a fiction writer is weaving. I think that, well, you know, we go back and forth about these things, don't we? about the forms, but I'm just saying why I like fiction. I'm not saying that one is superior. I think really, that's what I like to read. That's how I like to read. Yes. I like to hang out with poets. The thing is that as I said, like to make these distinctions between the forms and among the forms is kind of at least for me, it has been a self-put-down. When I talk about self-hatred, you know, I don't just mean like the obvious, you know, because of race and, you know, sex and, you know, what have you, but I think because, like, I'm sure that all of us who write would agree that, you know, like, we never really feel better than when we are writing, you know, and writing regularly and accomplishing, you know. I mean, there's just a way that things fall into place in our lives that they don't when we're away from it. Mm-hmm. So the thing is that, like, I always felt that I was denying myself in some ways that pleasure when I wasn't doing it, you know, the way that I wanted to. Economics are an incredibly major factor in that. People have been asking me what I do, and I tell them very happily that I'm unemployed. And when unemployment runs out, you know, I'll be back to the horrible dilemma of, like, how am I going to make a living and do what I need to breathe, you know, which is right. But the thing is that, as I said, like, because writing is such a great gift, you know, that each of us can give ourselves, I feel like when we steer away from it in some ways that we are so much undermining our well-being on a much more wider level than even just the act of putting pen to paper. I mean, like, doing your work doesn't only make you feel good when you're doing your work. So that's been a factor. Another factor that has kept me from writing for a number of years was being a lesbian and dealing with coming out. I always kept journals from the time that I was in college. I mean, freshman year of college, I have stacks of them, needless to say. And the thing is that I always felt that if I ever wrote about what was really on my mind, with the girls, that they would lock me up, the Catholic, you know? So the thing is that, like, not writing at that stage then was like a very good way to maintain self-censorship, because of the fact that, you know, I always used to imagine, you know, like in my, you know, late teens and early 20s, I would think, well, God, what if I really wrote the novel that I wanted to write, you know? And then I thought, but my goodness, I couldn't even imagine, you know, being able to, you know, create, like, fully developed heterosexual relationships in those novels, and yet every novel I ever read had fully developed, or at least some kind of heterosexual relationship. This is long years before I was thinking of myself as a lesbian, so you can see, like, what a profound block, you know, that was. Although, of course, you know, I can only see what that block was as hindsight, you know, at the time, you know, I could call it other things. So when I came out, you know, in, 1974, like, I found myself writing. I found myself taking it very seriously. You know, I found myself, you know, beginning to publish. Things changed, you know. I knew I could write about anything I wanted to write about, you know. I mean, it kind of just unleashed and unlocked, you know, this door that had to be closed, you know, before that time. I think that as a lesbian, it's really hard to find models, though, even now, for the kinds of things that, to me, are day-to-day experience. I feel like there's not nearly enough lesbian, prose being produced. At least I don't, when people ask me, I feel like I've never read a lesbian novel. Now I know I must have read some. Clearly I have read some. But the thing is, what Audie was talking about, lesbians are oppressed people. And the thing is, just as then third world people and women are oppressed, we have created a lot of poetry. I think it's hard to get it down. There have been tremendous political changes in the last 15 to 20 years that have changed the meaning of lesbianism in the world and what it means to be a woman. And while you're going through these changes, sometimes it's very hard to, describe them in great detail because they're hitting you so fast. I think more and more is happening, but I really, I really want to see more of what our lives are about in fiction. Another thing that has both kept me from writing and helped me to write is being an activist and an organizer. Because, I just spent, numbers of years, doing Black feminist organizing. And that's very time-consuming work. When I say Black feminist organizing, I don't just mean organizing Black women. I mean working on many different kinds of political issues that depend on the lives of Black women, which is most political issues. In other words, it's not just, women's groups, if you see what I mean. I mean, just every conceivable kind of issue. But it has been very time-consuming and also, but I feel, as I was saying earlier, to Holly and Joan, that I feel like I really have a lot of material at this point that has not been written about. I'll just say this one thing. When I read Small Changes by Marge Piercy, long before I came out, it was in the early 70s, I was so excited because of the fact that it was a book that described the women's movement. I wasn't even in the women's movement at that time. I bought that book in hardback and read it in 2 days, which for me is really, fast reading. I was so excited about it because it captured what it was like, And, I just, feel that. And they're talking about political work, and I really feel like that's the kind of writing, I want to see us do that really captures, some of those kinds of experiences.
I just wanted to say one more word, which was about fear, and somehow that's a thread that goes through, I think, most of what we've been speaking about there. And for each of us, however we define it, there is always that fear that stands between the knowledge and the expression of it. Fear of rejection, fear of worthlessness, fear of the incorrect, politically incorrect, emotionally incorrect, sexually incorrect, racially incorrect. I mean, there's an endless, but just being incorrect, right? And of being revealed, and made more vulnerable. Except what, for me, another piece of that strength, that power that Patty was talking about comes from, we're vulnerable anyway, and we've survived, right? And once you really feel that, then the speaking of it, the use of it, becomes less threatening, because we live this stuff every single day. We're just using it in our work.
You said quite enough.
I think we've used up all the time.
No, we're quiet
as
well.
We've been talking about writing and expressing ourselves, or you have. I heard a rumor that there were some problems with getting, but some of us are very publishing. And I don't want to switch to publishing if people want to talk about writing, but I do want, before we break up today, to hear some of them.
Yeah, that's true, and it's not a rumor, it's a fact, and I'm glad to talk about that at some later point. I think that the third world women who are on the outside, for any number of reasons, the means of production is very hard for us. Trying to figure out what. That's why I kicked the table and jumped off.
It's to be expected that a Black woman's anthology is going to get stepped over for 5 years before that is allowed to be on the bookshelf. It's to be expected. We should
not be surprised
about that. Because they've been doing that to us ever since we've been here in every other area. So, of course they don't want to publish our books. That goes without saying.
Well, publish them and not distribute them. The machine has so many different faces, you know.
I mean, I work in the jazz business, and jazz is a black cultural product, you know, thing, you know, just like black poetry is. And I mean, I see the same thing. The record business is just like the publishing business. I mean, it's the same thing. You know, you go in the studio, you make, you know, this record, and you have to sign this paper, giving away everything, and you know, you never end up with any money. Your record, you know, is never where you are. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody can ever find it. Nobody can ever buy it. And then at the end,
that's even who makes the records, of course.
Right. They send you a letter that says that you owe them some money. Oh. So I mean, it's capitalism. I mean, it's the same system that we're dealing with all around.
I don't know if we need to raise hands.
Oh, okay.
Just jump in.
There might be a way of at least beginning the germ of getting through that by contacting people that are in reviewing, in very, very public reviewing. And the only reason that I thought of that is because the other day I got a phone call from National Public Radio that said, would you like to do some book reviews for us? And we want stuff that's not necessarily new. We'd like small presses. We'd like stuff that's been overlooked. And I had this bridge called my back on my desk, and I thought, oh, all these things, what an opportunity. Mm-hmm. This is so wonderful, but it's only me, you know, that can, mm-hmm. right now. And then I, you know, started calling up a fellow that I know who does small, short subject film work for the library system I work for, and said, hey, you could do that for short films that are coming out of little tiny companies that are scratching for money to get that, and maybe there's a way to contact more people.
Yeah, we really have to build our own network. I really want to hear more about, you know, there's some things that people raised, you know, when we went around that, you know, I would really like to hear more talk about, particularly about the things that I guess sounds to me like they may divide us from each other or divide us from mm-hmm. ourselves. But you're right, Matt.
I think that one of the things that makes me angriest about the problems of getting that some of us have braved into print is the company that published it carries the title Feminist Press. And I'm thinking back to your book, This Bridge, and Donna Kate Rushing's poem at the beginning and part of the introductory remarks where you're clearly saying to us as white women, go do your own work in terms of racism, deal with it yourself, understand your own oppression, understand your own racism towards us, and we're not going to carry you anymore. Mm-hmm. But what the book turns around and does for us is become a beautiful bridge.
Thank you.
It becomes the tool, it becomes the hand across the bridge to say, we're not going to do it for you, but let us tell you one more time what you need to do.
I think it's also not just addressed to white women.
No, I don't mean that.
I mean, it's good that you said that, but if I could presume, I mean, I'm not an editor, I'm only a contributor, but I really think that the book is us saying to everybody, look. Really, you know, so that you shouldn't feel that it's just white women.
Because I'm trying to deal with my own racism.
Yeah, but I mean, I would think, you know, in some ways, you know, that a lot of stuff in that book is addressed to white men. You know, it's addressed to men of color. It's addressed to whoever needs to hear it. You know,
but the reason I was really liking what you were saying is because I thought you were talking about something else is which was the spirit of which the book was written.
Yes.
You know, not like who, you know, was pinpointed as audience, but that the fact that the way it was conceived and executed is that it was something that people could grasp hope from as opposed to despair. And I think that's really important when you're talking about doing, you know, writing about oppression. You know, how do you write about oppression? You know, do you write about it in such a way that you leave everybody so, you know, guilt-ridden and impotent that they just lie there for another 50 years and everything stays the same? Because it would have been real easy to write a book like that. I mean, there's enough anger amongst women of color. I mean, there could be a book that had been written that would lay out everybody flat, you know? So the thing is that I just think it's important to understand, you know, why that book has touched people. It's the spirit with which it's written. It's being completely honest about hating the oppression. It's saying, I think there's some hope, you know, I think that maybe we could look at this, you know, as opposed to just fall, you know, the victim of it.
Can I just turn you forward for a second? I wanted to ask about how do you deal with, like, Patty was saying something about, like, not wanting to tell the family that she writes what she writes. And, like, how do you deal with the fact that your mothers and sisters are, like, kind of disconnected, you know, who got a going Patty's experience? I mean, how do you kind of think about that when you're writing, that should I mediate what I write so that it's acceptable to my mother or sister, or you just write and let them take it and take it?
You know, all the people answer.
I think
I mean, the thing that's very strange about that, and I've found this out from personal experience as well as like some kids that I've taught from time to time, is that that whole parental fear is just that. It's very strange because these are the same parents that, if their own, you know, there's danger to themselves, or they think there's like some very imminent danger to their kids, they'll go out and fight the very people that they will tell you to play it safe with. So see, you have to play with that whole thing and realize that what they're doing is coming out of love, but it's a love that's being twisted just like everything else in this society, you know, against the very movements that we're trying to all do, you know, whatever, you know, whatever.
What I think though is that you probably always do have the consciousness that you're fighting it, and for me, having that consciousness that I wouldn't want to have my mother pick up this poem and all of a sudden be out to my mother when I just haven't like spoken to her about it or anything. That kind of mediation I do with myself lets me know that I'm still thinking about it, so it must still be there. That I know that I would like to be at a point where when I write something, I just write it, and there's that connection I feel with my best writing that I'm communicating something that's going on for me without self-censorship. But I feel like you go through points in your life and you may get over the point of feeling, if you're a person of color, that you don't have to write for white people all the time, and that's one hurdle. Or if you're a lesbian, you don't have to write for straight people or whatever. But it is like doing these hurdles all the time, and you get better at it, but I don't know if it ever completely goes away.
It doesn't. I'm probably the oldest woman in this room, and I was sitting there just thinking that when you said that. That it's always another phase, and it's always something else to overcome, and it's always another part of you. But it gets more real, more peaceful. Yeah, I guess I assume that this is true for everybody, but it may not be.
It becomes more of a flow.
Do you find that
more clear you are about your priorities and stuff, the easier it is to deal with the static?
Yes. At the same time, I found out, for instance, something about myself here. When Sadia said something to the effect that the reason you don't write is because what's in you is ugly or not acceptable, I thought, that's why I don't write. Now, it's been years. That's why I don't write. Here I am in my 50s, and I still say to myself, there's parts of me that are not acceptable.
Well, how are you doing about
it? Well, I know that. I know that I'm here.
Yeah, right.
And you're not acceptable to yourself. Or
correct. And continual exploration. Every time I think I've gotten there, there is another hurdle. And somebody says sometimes illuminates another part of myself. But with every part, you're freer. With everything that's laid out, mm-hmm. that's one more thing you don't have to hide. Right. The more laid out it is, of course, it's always, you know, the stage. But the more it's out, the less hiding. I guess you found that in your writing. It's there.
Yeah.
I can't take it back. It's published. It's on the TV. It's on the radio.
Yeah.
What can I take back? So my family fainted.
But they're expert. Our families, hey, we learn survival from them. That's the next thing.
Yeah,
we didn't come out from cabbages. We learned it from them. And what they can't take, they're not going to see.
But
that's the thing. And if that are hurt, we have lived with pain all our lives in survival. We learned it from them. They will hurt, but they really will survive it. And what I find is, you know,
so will we.
That, you know, every step that we take makes the next one easier, because we really do get, like Helen was saying, we get strong by doing what we need to be strong for. So there's no magic formula that you wait and say, okay, now I'm strong enough, now I can do it. You know, you take one thing and then the next one. Like Helen said, once it's out there, right? Now you have to start worrying about what isn't out there, what do I have to put out next? It's not that we become less, it's not for me, it's not that I've ever become less afraid. It's that I just stopped dealing so much with fear. And I'm saying all the time, we work when we're tired. Every last one of us knows what it is to work when you are bone tired and do it. We can work when we're afraid in the same way. It's no big thing. We keep waiting not to be afraid anymore. And that's never going to happen. Because that thing was put into us with our smallpox shot when we were, you know, 6 months old. Yeah.
And what's worse, pain of not sharing with your family and not being honest or having them angry at you? It seems to me they're both equally painful. They're both equally alienated. Neither one is a good space. Neither one is easy. If you have no relationship with your mother, who is the first woman in your life,
Does it matter?
Well,
it depends. See, for me, now I can't tell you about this, but for me, I sort of just divorced myself from my family a long time ago, and I started making my own family, because I have this feeling that even though I knew that they loved me, that they really didn't understand me, almost like I had been given to the wrong people at the hospital. So, because like all the things, so many things that were so important to me were just removed, was behind or removed or whatever. It wasn't high on their agenda. So it was always this conflict, you know, as part of growing up. I think everybody experiences that to a certain degree, you know. That, you know, your values are in conflict with theirs. So, for whatever reason, I just found myself growing away from them and growing more towards people who were like me, you know, and where I didn't have to defend myself.
Come on, you've been waiting so long.
What I hear is that you feel to me like a profound loneliness, because on the one hand, there are black women that I want to reach out to, and I don't care who she is. She's going to pass me on the street. I'm going to grab her. I mean, Jocelyn Moe reached me when she said, from now on, call me sister. So on the one hand, I want to do that, but on the other hand, I feel this barrier that came from me going to school, this barrier that comes from me writing, this barrier that comes from me talking about feminism and thinking about it, this barrier that comes from me saying lesbian, this barrier that I also say, what the fuck is this about? I mean, I went to all black, all woman high school. What is this shit? I mean, I didn't use
Right.
So on the one hand, you say there's power that comes from it, that comes from going ahead and dealing with it,
spite of this fear. But on the other hand, where do I get my renewal?
In that family, that's what I was
saying. But there's this conflict of getting with that family, because on the one hand, I want to be accepted by that black woman, and black women
reject her.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's hard. I'm making things sound overly simple, you know, but
that's clearly the answer, but and what I'm saying is that it's hard.
It is hard.
It is hard. Working on it, where do you get that sustenance to keep working on it?
That's part of the first part of the answer, realizing that it is hard, though.
May I speak to you? You know, when I started to write, I thought I was the only black lesbian who held a pen. I was not, in fact, but I had no, there were no women. There was Barbara, I didn't know Hattie. I just did it,
but Hattie,
you know?
Excuse me,
Hattie.
No support.
All right. But no sources of support.
But I portrayed women, that's always.